Ms. Spellings, Ms. Seuss.
May it please the Court, in June 2000, the Department of Education gave directly to Notre Dame a cash grant to allow Notre Dame to replicate its Alliance for Catholic Education, or ACE, program at other universities around the country. The ACE program is specifically designed to train parochial school teachers and assist them in incorporating Christian religious beliefs and practices into their lives and their parochial school teaching. This direct monetary aid to a religious institution for an essentially religious program violates the Establishment Clause because the monitoring of the use of the funds was so inadequate that it can't ensure that the funds weren't used for religious purposes or activities. Below, the parties fully briefed the Establishment Clause issue on cross motions for summary judgment. After the case was filed, but before summary judgment was fully briefed, the last of the grant funds were dispersed to Notre Dame and spent by Notre Dame. This led the district court to erroneously hold that this case is moot because...
When you say spent by Notre Dame, given to these other colleges by Notre Dame?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe that after we filed suit, Notre Dame received... spent some of the additional money by giving it to some of the other institutions.
So, what are they doing with it? Do you know?
The other institutions right now?
The money that Notre Dame gave it.
That's not in the record, Your Honor.
Why didn't you sue them? Maybe they still have the money.
Actually, Your Honor, we didn't sue Notre Dame either. We've sued.
I know. I didn't understand that either. Why didn't you sue? Your argument is that Notre Dame, you know, received these improper. Improper grant from the government, which you want Notre Dame, you want to be paid back so that the fisc is restored, you know, to fiscal integrity. So I don't know why you didn't sue Notre Dame and the other colleges.
Well, Your Honor, because it's an Establishment Clause claim, and what we're claiming is that the Department of Education has violated the Establishment Clause by failing to adequately...
Sure, of course that's what you argue. But on the other hand, this is restitution, right? That is the Department of Education doesn't have the money. It's Notre Dame has it, maybe passed through its fingers, and now it's in the hands of the little colleges, the other colleges. So why isn't your argument that they are the recipients of this illegal money, so they have to cough it back?
Well, they most certainly do. But what this court...
So why didn't you sue Notre Dame and the other colleges?
Because I think that the remedy for our Establishment Clause violation has to be an order against the government.
Why so indirect? Look, your argument is money went out of the Treasury that shouldn't have gone out, and it should be put back.
That's right.
But it doesn't matter whether it's put back pursuant to an order by the Department of Education or whether a court orders Notre Dame and the other colleges to put the money back in the Treasury, return the grant to the Treasury. They weren't supposed to get it. That's your whole argument. They weren't supposed to get it. That means they have to return it.
Well, and of course, as a matter of equity, this court can order that, absolutely, as a remedy. And... I mean, the fact that recoupment exists, whether it's the court ordering the secretary to seek recoupment pursuant to her statutory duty under the Federal Claims Collection Act, or whether it's the court ordering Notre Dame to give the money back, the fact is a remedy exists. And that remedy will redress the injury here. The injury from the Establishment Clause violation, obviously, is that the government has sponsored or endorsed religion by funding religious activities.
Now, your opponents say that assuming they're standing and so on, as you argue. Nevertheless, there are unresolved factual questions as to what these colleges actually did with them. So do you have a comment on that?
Your Honor, none of the facts that are material to the Establishment Clause violation are disputed.
Well, they say that your best evidence is the home pages of these colleges, and that's hearsay. You know, they're not parties, so it's not an admission, and it's not admission against penal interest. It's just hearsay, and you know, maybe they're inaccurate.
Well,
maybe they took the money. They said, "Great, we'll take the money. We'd love to get money. They want us to do this religious instruction. We'll tell them we're doing the religious instruction. Actually, we want the money to repair our basketball court." Then they wouldn't be.
That's right, Your Honor. But the purpose is undisputedly of the ACE program and the ACE replication program.
No, that's the purpose. But we don't. But their argument is we don't actually know what these colleges did with the money.
Right, but Your Honor, under the
universities are notorious for diverting charitable donations to unintended purposes.
Well, and under the Establishment Clause law, as it relates to a direct cash grant from the government to a religious institution, there does not have to be a showing of actual diversion. What's relevant is that the government gave, and this is all undisputed, the government gave a cash grant directly to religious institutions and for programs that at least involve some...
Well, it gave it to Notre Dame, right?
That's right.
What if Notre Dame, I mean, their argument is, so they gave this money to these other institutions and, you know, told them what they could use it for, what they couldn't use it for, and then these other institutions disobeyed those orders and spent it on forbidden uses. But the only evidence of that, they claim, is the websites, the web pages.
But again, Your Honor, that's not the evidence that's required. Well, first of all, the websites arguably are not hearsay because the Notre Dame itself cited to those websites as providing information about those programs in its annual reports to the Department of Education. So it has manifested adopted a belief in the truth of those by citing to them as providing information about the program. But in addition, the only thing that matters when you're talking about a direct cash grant to a religious institution is that there be a restriction on the use of those funds and that there be an administrative enforcement of those restrictions.
Yeah, how did we know that there was no administrative enforcement here?
Well, Your Honor,
Notre Dame, like any other school, can legally receive a grant from the government.
Absolutely.
And here, as long as the grant is monitored, the way the money is dispersed is monitored so that it doesn't go to religious purposes, goes to secular purposes, that's okay. How do we know here on this record, which only, I guess the issue here is mootness, and if it's not moot, you want to say it's not moot, and I win.
Well,
I don't know.
Well, and Your Honor, the record is extensive, actually, and the parties have briefed extensively the Establishment Clause issue below, and actually in this court, and there's no other evidence to be gathered below. If the court wanted to remand it, there would be no point. All the undisputed evidence is here, and it shows that the Department of Education and Notre Dame, neither of them did any adequate monitoring of this program. The only monitoring, if you can call it that, that happened before this was that the Department of Education received one annual grant report from Notre Dame, which itself pointed to these websites and these books as being about the program, and those showed that there was a lot of religious activity going on, yet Notre Dame did nothing else to monitor the program until 6 months after we filed this lawsuit when it did a site visit. The result of that site visit was that the Department of Education said itself that the documentation was not sufficient to show what the grant money was spent on, and it specifically required Notre Dame to produce documentation that would show exactly what each expenditure was made for and whether that expenditure was inherently religious in nature. Notre Dame did not do that. All of the documentation that's available is in this record right now, and the documentation, the financial documentation, shows only that grants were the grant funds were spent on these very vague general categories that could not possibly let a court know whether or not the grant funds were spent on a religious use, and the standard is that they must be able to guarantee that the funds were spent only on non-religious uses. They cannot do that here, and therefore summary judgment should be granted for plaintiffs.
I want to go back to the mootness issue
for a moment.
You were originally sued for injunctive relief, as
That's
I understand
correct,
it. You're now admitting that injunctive relief is not possible as a remedy because the money's been spent.
No, Your Honor. We're asking the court to enjoin the secretary to seek recoupment of the funds. So that's our injunctive.
You're pursuing recoupment as a remedy, not injunctive relief to preclude any further disbursement of the funds because they've been fully dispersed.
That's right. We're not asking for the court to enjoin future payments because there are not any.
But isn't it the case that the recoupment statute that you're citing as the source of the remedy that you're seeking, the regulations under that statute specifically provide that it does not create any private right of action against the government, that there can't be injunctive relief in this situation. The government cannot be ordered to seek recoupment.
Your Honor, we're not claiming, our claim is not that the Secretary or Notre Dame violated the regulations or the grant terms, although that is likely. Our claim is purely an Establishment Clause claim, and the Secretary does not have discretion to determine whether or not she, her own agency, violated the Establishment Clause or not.
But the remedy that you're seeking is purely statutory, and the regulations promulgated pursuant to that statute specifically preclude that remedy in this situation. The Secretary has sole discretion to seek recoupment.
Actually, no. Your Honor, I would say no. The Federal Claims Collection Act takes that discretion away from the Secretary. If this court finds that there's an Establishment Clause violation, then the federal government has a claim for the recoupment of those funds.
That can only be the case if Notre Dame committed some sort of legal violation. And the only legal violation that Notre Dame can possibly have committed is a violation of the regulations that governed the grant. And the only way that can be remedied is pursuant to the recoupment statute, which says there's no private right of action.
No, Notre Dame
cannot have committed an Establishment Clause violation.
No.
A private actor.
No, that's right. And that's why our claim is against the Department of Education, which did...
Well, what relief are you asking against Notre Dame, since it is a defendant?
The Notre Dame intervened as a defendant. We are asking for an order from this court enjoining the Secretary to seek recoupment from Notre Dame of the grant funds.
Are you saying they can't get the money? Suppose Notre Dame hadn't dispersed the money to these other colleges but was sitting on it. They had completed the program, and now they had some surplus. Are you saying you wouldn't be able to get it back from Notre Dame? You have to go through the Secretary of Education?
Well, Your Honor, as I said before, I think that for our establishment, it's clear that for our Establishment Clause claim, this court has the equitable power to order any relief that is available, and that would be possibly one available remedy.
Another question: ordinarily, when a defendant discontinues an unlawful practice, that does not moot the case, including injunctive case. Otherwise, it'd be too. It would be ridiculous. A defendant would just say, all right, I've stopped doing that. You want an injunction against this activity. I've stopped the activity. Now go away. And then as soon as the suit is dismissed, it resumes the activity. Why is it that you seem to think that Notre Dame will not reapply for this money?
Well, we just have no evidence of that, Your Honor.
No, but you have no evidence. Does this program still exist? Federal program?
The federal program? The FPPSI grant funds. I believe those are ongoing, and so I believe they give those every year.
Why couldn't Notre Dame reapply? I understand.
Well, there's nothing stopping them from reapplying. Absolutely not. We don't have any evidence that they have.
Why do you agree your injunctive action is moot, then? I don't understand that.
I'm sorry?
Have Notre Dame committed itself not to reapply?
No, Your Honor.
Have they said, no, we're never going to
reapply? No, Your Honor. No, they have not.
Well, I don't know why you concede that that makes your injunctive action moot.
I don't, Your Honor. I don't believe that our injunctive action is moot. We've argued that it is not.
Okay,
thank
well,
you.
Thank you, Mr. Sturgill.
Good morning, Your Honors. Lowell Sturgill from the Department of Justice representing the Secretary of Education. This case is moot, as the district court held, because all the grant funds have been drawn down from the accounts.
I don't understand that. Isn't this an ongoing program? Can't they reapply? Can't Notre Dame reapply?
Dr. Johnstone, who is the person who was in charge of the program from Notre Dame, executed an affidavit and a declaration. And one of those, she said that Notre Dame has no intent to reapply
what
for this.
What do you mean? It has no present intent or it's committed not to reapply?
She doesn't say they're committed not to reapply.
What if the suit is dismissed and tomorrow she says, oh, great, the suit is dismissed. Now we'll reapply and we'll get the money again, and we'll have another suit in a few years.
I think that's too speculative to support in a case of controversy.
I thought the general rule is discontinuance of unlawful activity by a defendant does not moot an injunctive action. There has to be evidence, commitment, something to show that this really won't recur. For example, because the defendant had gone out of business, something of that sort. You know, it's the W.T. Grant case. It's a very well-settled proposition.
I think the key is whether there is ongoing activity. And in this case, you've suggested that the ongoing activity is the program.
No, it doesn't. It's not ongoing. Because, look, it's my example. You're sued to enjoin some activity. So you say, fine, I stopped the activity. Now go away. Then as soon as the suit is dropped, you resume.
Well, first of all, that's not...
to stop them from reapplying as soon as we affirm dismissal of the suit.
That's not what happened in this case. In this case, there was no intent to stop the suit by stopping engaging in the activity.
The grant
ran its course.
You don't have to show an intent to defeat the lawsuit. All you have to show is that although the activity sought to be enjoined has been stopped, we don't know whether it's been permanently stopped.
Well, I don't see why this case is...
We don't know. You say it's just speculative. They may reapply tomorrow.
I don't see why this case is different from the Lyons case. In the Lyons case from the Supreme Court, there's a person who is convicted of a crime, and then the chokehold case. And the person is back out on the street, the Supreme Court said, where he could engage in another crime and might be in a pattern of engaging in a crime.
Remote.
The Supreme Court said that's not enough.
That's pretty remote, unless you think Notre Dame is, you know, like a kind of recidivist criminal.
Well,
on the other mootness issue, I don't understand the other mootness issue. The theory of these taxpayer suits is pretty artificial, but the theory is that the Treasury has dispersed money illegally, and a taxpayer can complain. Now, you'd think the natural remedy for the taxpayer would be to have the money put back. So why would these cases ever be moot? If they've spent the money because the injunction suit operated too slowly, as you point out, if they spent the money, then they have to put it back. So Notre Dame and these other schools have to return the money. Why is it any more complicated than that?
Well, that was the plaintiff's main theory in the district court. In the Court of Appeals, they've given it about two sentences in their brief,
fine,
which I think they've abandoned.
That's fine, but why isn't that the sensible solution? The Notre Dame stole from the Treasury, to put it, you know, in its baldest light, and so they have to put the money back. That's all.
Because the Supreme Court, in two cases, Romer and Lemon II, held that recoopment is not the appropriate constitutional
remedy.
That's
a very complicated, tortured opinion. Very much, you know, connected to the particular facts of the case. If they're right on the merits, your opponents are right on the merits, this is a naked violation of the Establishment Clause, which could be painlessly remedied by ordering Notre Dame to pay back several hundred thousand dollars, not going to break Notre Dame or anything like that. So why isn't that the natural remedy?
Because in Romer, the Supreme Court had a case just like this one, and it said in a case where the money has been drawn down and spent by the grantee, recoupment is not a proper constitutional remedy. And that it's just right on point. Also, there's no evidence in this case, we believe, that the money was wrongly spent for religious purposes.
No, of course. That's the merits. We're talking about mootness.
And the Romer case is right on point. The Romer case says there's no right to recoupment as a constitutional remedy in a case like this, where the money has already been, it's straight from the opinion. I don't have the cite, it's in the footnote at the end of the opinion. Romer says that. And Lemon 2 was a case just like that. And in Lemon 2, it was not a recoupment case. It was about whether there could be restitution.
Lemon 2 is not a good citation for you because it... Because it's a very there's a very complicated.
The linchpin, I think, the Lemon too.
Fact. So tell us about Romer then. So Romer is your big case.
In Romer, the Supreme Court refused to order recoupment of grants to religious colleges. These grants were made under a prior version of the statute that was unconstitutional because it had no restrictions against use of money for religious purposes, which is precisely what the plaintiffs are wrongly alleging here, because this program did have restrictions against use for religious purposes. So Romer's a worse case than this one on the facts. There you had a statute that was admittedly unconstitutional, and the Supreme Court held that recoupment was not the proper constitutional remedy. Footnote 23 at page 767 says the funds in question here long since have been paid out to and spent by the colleges.
As your opponent argues, wasn't there a reliance interest in the Romer case because, the recipient there relied on a statute which it thought was constitutional. Thought it was constitutional, then later the Supreme Court held it was unconstitutional. And in that circumstance, you could argue, well, you shouldn't make them pay back. They're innocent. And, of course, you could make the same argument here, but that's different. That's not a mootness argument. Right? That's an argument that it would be inequitable to order recoupment. That's quite different from mootness.
Well, the reason why
you
this...
You understand that is different from mootness. So we're past mootness, right?
No, because... Well, yes,
yeah,
you could say
that. Past mootness.
I understand.
All right, we don't have mootness. Okay, we're starting.
Well, they're saying the reason why the case is not moot.
We're talking about reliance.
Okay,
right, reliance. But now that's of course bound up with the merits. Now, what I find odd about your merits argument is, are you really suggesting that these web pages of these other colleges, so the religious colleges, Valparaiso, are fraudulent? Describe religious expenditures for their money, but actually they just did that to fool Notre Dame, and they really spent it on repairing their basketball court.
No, our principal point is that even the web pages don't show that the money was spent for religious purposes.
Well, will you concede the accuracy of the web pages?
No, we wouldn't.
Well, then, if they're inaccurate, then aren't you accusing them of fraud?
It's the plaintiff's burden to prove that the money was wrongly spent.
Answer my question.
I don't believe the web pages say that the money was spent for religious...
I understand you. Can we take the web pages as truthful?
I don't believe so. We don't know.
If they're not truthful, they're lies. Do you think it's possible that they're lies?
We don't know one way or the other.
What do you think?
I don't know.
You're agnostic. You think maybe Valparaiso University is engaged in a fraud? It's taking money under false pretenses?
No, of course not. Of course not.
Why do you say of course not?
Because
if you disbelieve that, you must think their representations are accurate.
I believe they probably are.
Well,
I have no reason to believe that they're not.
Okay.
The department, I don't know if I'm out of my time yet or not. I have 1 minute. The department made an extensive inquiry into this case and to whether the money was wrongly spent. It did a site visit. It had the grant reports, and it didn't find any kind of a violation of the grant terms. Because of that, this is with respect to the claim for recoupment under the Federal Claims Collection Act. And our first point is they don't have a right, as Your Honor said, to make that argument because there's no private right of action under that statute. But the second is there's no proof of a debt. The agency has looked at this and determined that the money was not spent in violation of the grant agreement. Hence, there's no debt.
How did they treat these web pages? What did they say about them?
They didn't address the web pages in their site report.
Why not?
I don't know.
Well, they, it doesn't sound like a very thorough report.
Well, I think, in fact, the scrutiny that that this program got is greater, if anything, than the scrutiny that
You have web pages which appear to say that these are religious programs, and you're saying that the site report did not mention these. They didn't say, oh, this is odd. You know, they say they're spending this on all sorts of religious activities, but they're not?
Well, the grant performance reports themselves disclosed that there was religious activity occurring. The question is, was the money being spent to support that? And there's no evidence that the money was spent to support these programs.
There were other funds coming in for salaries, right?
The federal funds were a very small percentage.
But they're spent for salary, isn't it?
Yes, but the responses from Notre Dame and its subgrantees said that none of the federal money was supporting the salaries of none of the people were spending their time on this religious activity. Dr. Johnstone, for example, had an affidavit that said she wasn't spending her time on any kind of religious activity. So naturally the department said, well, our money is not going to support this religious activity. And that's the problem with the plaintiff's evidence. There's more than just our money coming in, and they haven't linked our money to any of the very minuscule, in fact, probably de minimis religious activity that is occurring in the program. And now I am out of time.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Sturgill. Mr. Carvin?
May it please the Court, Michael Carvin from Notre Dame. I'd like to first begin in response to Judge Posner's question. The WT grant line of cases are clearly an apposite for three reasons. First of all, it's well established that the voluntary cessation doctrine does not apply if a statute expires on its own terms. Most notably, that's Burke v. Barnes, which is cited on page 17 of our brief, as well as numerous Seventh Circuit cases in footnote 9. And that's because it's not as if they reacted to the litigation to engage in gamesmanship to moot out the case. It's because it was preordained that the case would become moot. Second of all, those are situations where the defendants have been alleged to engage in unlawful activity. Here, of course, there's nothing unlawful. Notre Dame can't violate the Establishment Clause, nor do the plaintiffs suggest a remarkable assertion that it would
say, yes, Notre Dame can't. Notre Dame can't violate the Establishment Clause, but it can certainly be an accomplice.
Certainly, and they would do that by taking the money and misusing it for religious purposes.
Right.
But that violation would not be applying for a grant. This was a one-time grant. This is not an ongoing program. This is one-time direct budget items in.
What do you say? One time. What's one time? Is the statute still in force under which and
no. No, it was a line item appropriation in fiscal year 2000 that had a lifespan of 5 years from its outset. It's gone. It will never come back again. It was a line item appropriation.
I see.
This is not some ongoing program.
It'll come back again if a congressman from Indiana wants to give more money to Notre Dame.
That's three conjectures, right? That he wants to do it, that the government, that he gets it passed, that Notre Dame asked for it, which they have no intent to do so, and that it's for the ACE program. And remember, their argument is not that Notre Dame is somehow a second-class citizen that can't get money for the ACE program or for anything else. They're arguing about the implementation of those dollars, how you trace the dollars. So even if all four of those contingencies occurred, you still wouldn't have an Establishment Clause violation under their theory unless we had this bookkeeping problem that is the gravamen of...
Well, that's the merit. that's a merits issue.
No, no, but I'm saying, but capable of repetition. Is there reasonable likelihood of it occurring? I'm just saying nobody's arguing that if they get the money again for the program, that even that violates the Establishment Clause. There's got to be some misuse of the money down the road. So it's really a string of conjectures to get you to anything that's... And of course, they're not even alleging that it's capable of happening.
But on the more fundamental issue,
yep.
Isn't it true, if you actually misspent this money and were an accomplice in violating the Establishment Clause, wouldn't you have to give it up?
No, not at all, Your Honor.
That's ridiculous. What if Congress said, okay, so we love Valparaiso University, so we're going to make Lutheranism the national religion of the United States,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to give $1 billion to the Lutheran Church.
Right.
And the Lutheran Church takes the $1 billion, builds, lots of nice churches and so mm-hmm. on. And all the money is spent
right.
before, the ACLU, brings its suit. And are you saying that there would be no, that the Lutheran, even if there were no reliance interest or anything,
yeah.
it's obviously unconstitutional grant, that the Lutheran Church could keep all their buildings and...
Yes, in fact,
that's ridiculous.
Well, it may be ridiculous, but
that's the.
But if I could, maybe if I could.
It's such an offense to common sense.
But here's the two. Well, there's one offense to common sense: the notion that you could spend $1 billion without the ACLU getting into court beforehand, because every time you put up a crucifix on a park, they're in there in one day. But wholly apart from that, Your Honor, the Supreme Court has decided this case.
No,
it's called Valley Forge. Yep. In Valley Forge, that's exactly what they argued. They said, look, the government has given this building to a religious group, and what we want you to do, because it offends our taxpayer standing, is give it back.
No, look, what the court held in Valley Forge
right.
was that it was not a violation of the spending clause.
Yes, and this is not a violation of the spending clause because the money has been spent.
No, that's not Valley Forge. The reason it wasn't a violation of the spending clause was that the government was divesting itself of surplus property under the property clause of the Constitution, which is not subject to the taxpayer standing. That's completely unrelated.
That is a fair point, Judge Posner, but I would respectfully suggest there was two points to the Valley Forge. One was not just that it was the property clause, it was that you were challenging action by the executive branch. Your ability to challenge under Flass v. Cohen, Congress's ability to tax and spend relates only to expenditures.
But this
if you want to recover... I'm sorry.
The question of whether you're challenging executive action, executive discretion, or congressional action is completely different from the remedial question, which is, if the money has been dispersed, can you follow that money to whoever is... this is basic restitution law. Unjust enrichment. You follow the money to the person who's holding this illegal money, and you make him cough it up.
I totally agree, Your Honor. If the government was the plaintiff, they could get their money back. The question is, what interest do these people have?
No, they don't want it back for themselves. They want it sent back
to the federal treasury. I'm saying. And what interest do they have in whether or not the federal treasury gets its coffers in hand?
The same interest any taxpayer has. What interest does a taxpayer have in enjoying an expenditure? It's obviously not going to affect his wealth.
And that's why under...
But all they want is... If they enjoin the expenditure, it wouldn't be made. If they get you to pay it back, then it's as if it had never been made.
And I would respectfully disagree on two fundamental principles. First of all, under the Establishment Clause, you can't unring the bell.
Of course you can.
If Valparaiso has engaged in government-sponsored indoctrination of a student in 2001 pursuant to federal dollars, whether or not Notre Dame cuts a check in 2006 to the federal government is not going to in any way ameliorate or affect that religiously sponsored indoctrination by a partner.
That makes your argument worse.
Because
what you're saying is that the remedy of returning the money is really just a pathetic effort to try to rectify this wrong.
I don't know why that makes
it better than nothing. Very often, remedies in cases are inadequate. The passage of time and all sorts of things. You don't say to a person, look, as a result of this breach of contract, you actually suffered damages of $2 million. But because of wrinkles of contract law, passage of time, this and that, the court is only going to give you $30,000 back. You suffered $1 million, you only get $30,000. The defendant can't argue, well, that means the case is moot because this relief is so pathetic.
And if there was financial obligations running between the plaintiff and the defendant, obviously it's not moot. The question is what interest they have. And under Romer and under Burke v. Barnes, which was a pure spending statute, aid to El Salvador, if that had been unconstitutionally expended,
the court said the case was moot. Suppose a government official embezzled money from the Treasury
mm-hmm.
and gave it as a charitable contribution to Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think Notre Dame could keep that money?
I would think the government would have standing to get its money back. Do I think a taxpayer could come in and say, we're not affected, we've never been to any of these five schools, and we're not affected by this embezzlement? Could they have standing to pursue it? Absolutely not.
Make the same argument if a taxpayer is seeking...
There is a very narrow exception to the normal injury
right?
requirements.
The same argument. The taxpayer who is suing, who is asserting taxpayer standing, is not the person who was offended by the, you know, or attended the church
which,
or didn't attend.
Which is
right?
why you normally don't have taxpayer standing, and they've created, I need to emphasize, an extraordinarily narrow exception to the general disavowal of injury and taxpayer standing when Congress is spending the money. And Valley Forge makes it clear, we're talking about Congress, and we're talking about spending.
Congress
we're not talking about recovering
here.
The money.
Congress spent money here. The question is who's pocketed it.
Right.
But
well,
anyway...
But if I could just...
We're not going to persuade each other.
In terms of Romer, I just do want to correct one factual misperception. It was conceded that the money that went to the religious institutions under Romer was unconstitutional because it was under the unamended
yes,
statute.
Yes, and the question was whether there was a reliance interest that would... That would affect a restitution is equitable. You can always make an equitable defense. You can make an equitable defense that if you violated the Establishment Clause, you did so inadvertently and excusably and so on.
And,
but we haven't reached that point in the case.
But haven't we? Because their entire argument for mootness is that there is a viable available remedy. If Romer makes it clear that that's not
no,
a viable...
No, that depends on whether there's a reliance interest. That has to be shown. It can't be assumed.
And I would assume that if the institution in Romer had shown that a concededly unconstitutional statute created a reliance interest, even though they had money over it, then a statute that I would argue is certainly plausibly constitutional can't create the reliance interest.
That statute wasn't conceded.
Yeah.
The whole point in Romer was that this, when they got the money, they had no reason to think the statute was unconstitutional.
And that's the minor factual point I'm trying to convey. The statute in Romer was upheld. The Fowler-Selinger program was upheld. It was never declared unconstitutional. A predecessor statute
right.
with no secular use restrictions was conceded to be unconstitutional. That's the money they were going after,
but
not the money under the statute that had gone... Okay.
But the court thought there was a reliance interest. And if there's a you don't think the court said there was a reliance interest?
Judge Posner, I think if...
Do you think the court mentioned reliance?
Of course. Not? And without going remanding back to the district court, they said, even with respect to this concededly unconstitutional statute, reliance is shown by taking and spending the money. If that is true, then by definition, we would argue, taking money under a statute that's never been held unconstitutional would constitute equal reliance.
You're saying Romer establishes a sort of per se reliance.
There was never. It was as a matter of law, ruling by an appellate court, sure.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Carvin. So how much time does Ms. Seuss have? 1 minute?
Actually, Your Honor, this case is not at all like Romer. Romer and Lemon 2 were both based on the fact that recoupment or a retroactive remedy was not allowed because of reliance on an old principle of law, whereas Lemon 1 created a new principle of law. And so the reliance, the school's reliance on the old law was reasonable because this was a new principle of law created by the Supreme Court. We obviously don't have that here. Nyquist established over 30 years ago that when there's a direct monetary grant to a religious institution, it must be monitored sufficiently to ensure, to guarantee that the funds
Nyquist isn't the standard anymore. It's Agostini.
Well, Your Honor, this court in Berger, actually after Agostini and after Mitchell, stated that specifically that Nyquist, it said, quote, directly controls cases that involve direct cash grants like this one. And in Berger also involved a direct cash aid from the government to a religious college. And it also involved only whether the aid had the effect of government indoctrination, and specifically said that a direct monetary aid to a religious institution is government indoctrination unless there is a restriction on religious use of the funds and adequate enforcement such that it can be guaranteed that the funds were not used for religious purpose. And that standard clearly has not been met here. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you, Ms. Seuss, and thank you to Mr. Sturgill and Mr. Carvin. Next case for argument is United States versus Browning. Ms. Rhodes.
May it please the court.